This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
Welcome to yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, and I'm delighted to be back again with my co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael, missed that last show, and it was a good one with you and Ian.
Welcome back, Michael. Good to have you back, and glad you are safe and sound and not flying around.
Yup, safe and sound, not flying around. Well, look, we have got an incredible show here with all kinds of things that we want to touch on. So let's get right to it. There were two things we wanted to touch on from follow-ups from what you and Ian were talking about. For example, the first one is the support for Unity. So I was really intrigued about these discussions that were happening and the kinds of things that were going on with the Unity GameForce engine and working with Spatial. You have a perspective on this bit of new news?
Yeah, I think this is where it was going to end up, right? Both Improbable and Unity kind of need each other.
Yeah.
Whether we're talking Epic or Spatial. And so when we think about that, getting the right platform to scale for these open world games and the right tools to make them engaging, this shouldn't be a fight because neither of them can survive completely without the other. You need both to make both of them compelling. And so it was just, you know, it was a spat and the spat is over. And I think that's good. We're back to where we were beforehand.
And the terms of service are now updated and changed. So hooray.
Yay.
Yay. All
but right. We just wanted to wrap that up. It was a really good discussion with Ian about that last week. And it was all kind of exploding last Friday as it was going on. So, you know, it
live
was
in real time.
Your things are changing. No, your things are changing. No, you suck. No, you suck. Oh, I hate you. I hate you too. Right. And now it's like, never mind.
Yep.
So life is good.
Glad to see problems are resolved. Hatchets have been buried and now everyone's moving forward again. Which is not exactly the case for a particular AR headset company called Meta. I don't remember if you talked about Meta last week, but
no, Meta wasn't the one we were talking about last week. Last week was ODG, which had pretty much sold off its assets. And Meta is another one that I've seen their headsets in the past. We've talked about them. They do some really cool stuff. And evidently, as they were struggling through their financials, someone just bought up all their IP. So they were out trying to market themselves for another round of funding to really continue the progression of their headset before they got completely swamped with debt and wiped out. And during that process, somebody came in and said, yeah, no, we're just going to buy you. So,
well, there you go.
It's similar. And I think the interesting part about this, and we talked about this last week too, is where are we in the timeline of AR becoming mainstream? And as you and I talked about and Ian and I talked about, with the advent of really high quality AR capabilities at the operating system level of mobile phones, do you really need this additional hardware with its own proprietary operating systems?
Yeah.
And so I think what we're seeing is the market's maturing. People have accepted that AR is valuable. They're still trying to figure out valuable in what capacity or what use case. But because of this, this is what you expect to happen. You expect the market to shake out. You expect some of the really cool innovators early on to either be bought up or to go under because the market doesn't really go directly their way. And you see the dominant players arriving, and I think those dominant players are really Apple and Google.
Yeah, and if had I been on with you and Ian for that conversation, the yes and I would have shared is I still believe that viewing the world through a phone is not necessarily the most engaging experience. And there still needs to be a way to be able to have an AR or VR type experience powered by a device that maybe you're carrying around with you, but experienced not by holding that device up between you.
Well, yeah, this is the whole hands-free thing. In an industrial work environment, you need that hands-free. And in the industrial work environment, you still have Google Glass, right? So that use case is there. But for the masses, for most benefit that they're going to get, they don't want it all the time. And when they need it, it's something short, it's something quick. And having a handset or a smartphone in your pocket to pull it out and get that experience is good enough. Now, I agree with you. I think longer term, having it built into glasses, into contact lenses, maybe even projected out from physical stations in kind of a hologram-looking world, right, where you walk up and the concierge and the hologram pops up magically out of nowhere and says, "Hi, Michael, how can I help you today?" Those are all sets of AR use cases that will come about eventually. But I think right now it's getting the right use cases, learning the appetite in the market, and maybe then we'll get something more wearable, but it's not needed right now, and we're working through an early market.
Yeah. Emergency medical holograms, they're coming.
Oh, by the way, do you watch Orville?
No.
Okay.
Unless you are counting Redenbacher.
So case, Orville, yes, is the show that came out last year by the guy who did Family Guy and other shows like that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a Star Trek takeoff, but goofier, snarkier, a little ham-fisted in some of the messaging, but it's okay. The last episode I watched had two people that I know for a fact were on Star Trek episodes, as in main characters in Star Trek. One was the holographic doctor, and the other one was he a bartender with the hair sticking out funky on his side of his head that played...
Oh, Neelix?
Neelix. That might have been it. It might have been Neelix.
He wasn't a bartender, I'm gonna have to look him up. But he was the cook.
I'm going to have to look him up. Yes, it was, yeah, Neelix. Hmm. Good catch.
Yeah,
so Neelix show, but... and the medical hologram doctor played key characters in the last episode. And I'm like, he just liked Star Trek so much that he wanted to make a comedy show of it and hire the old Star Trek actors.
Hey, you know what? More power to them. If you've got a vision and a dream like that and can make it happen, there you go.
Yep.
Like, you know, I would love to be able to wield a lightsaber. So maybe the way to be able to do that is create a comedy show that uses lightsabers and starts bringing in the Mark Hamills of the world, right?
Well, there was...
Mark, if you're available...
did we talk about that? I remember seeing online recently the company that did all the, you know, make real versions of, like, the web slingers, Thor's hammer, et cetera, and they did one of a lightsaber.
Oh, well, I remember we talked about the Thor's hammer one, because the Mjolnir, you could throw it and it would come back to you, and it had kind of like a hovery thing and all that stuff in there.
They've made a lightsaber now.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's really good if you want to slowly cut through something.
Well, yeah, that's what you do. Like when you meet that, you know, that big, you know, metal door that you need to get through, it does take a little while to get through it.
Yeah, it's like when Darth Vader basically took a butter knife and cut Obi-Wan in half, right? Slowly sawed through him.
Well, speaking of slow and things that are not slow,
comedy.
We have a game, and comedy. We have a game that that Ian found for us, and I was real tickled to watch the promo for it. So this is the Grand Tour game.
Yes.
TGT, I guess, is the Grand Tour. And this is kind of funny because this is a TV show, kind of on the same thing we were just talking about, where you get to interact with the hosts through a game that looks like it's going to be a subscription model, if I'm reading this right, so that when they're showing the cars that they're driving in the TV show, you will be able to experience that like with the hosts in the game and be able to do all kinds of crazy, wacky stuff like these trained professionals can.
Yes. Now, these are the guys who used to do a show on BBC television that I didn't watch, but they would test out cars and do a lot of talk about cars, et cetera. They've now, I guess, created this new show called The Grand Tour. At least I think that's the kind of the connection here. And they do crazy stuff with cars, right? And you get to drive these same locales in the same vehicles with them on a PS4. That's the tie-in here. And it looks to be $15. Is it truly a subscription or is it a one-time download?
I got the sense it was a subscription.
Yeah. I don't have a PS4, so I don't. But it talks about, you know, here it is, and it's $14.99 on Amazon.
Yeah, but thinking about
maybe it's that plus a subscription.
Maybe. But think about how sticky you can make something by having the experience of being part of the show or doing the things that you're seeing on the show, and either playing as one of the stars of the show or as yourself, and you're interacting with them. And if they take it from a show perspective of, oh, you know, Fun Guy 22 was playing episode 17 where we did the such and thus, and look what happened to him. The car's flipping over and is on fire and water coming everywhere. The level of engagement for that could be really intriguing, wouldn't it? It'd be almost like Twitch, except on TV, which I guess it is on TV, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, so, you know, looking through their FAQ, though, it looks like you buy the season, and then you get the content rolled out to you each week in line with the show. So it's not a subscription for the game, period. You buy the season for the whole... It's just like you buy, you know, FIFA 2019 to get the season of the players, right?
Yes. But that level of interaction, that level of engagement, the ability to play a player or star or something like that, just kind of ramps things up and begins to blend a little bit more reality and the experience of the viewer participant. So intriguing entertainment idea that you can see happening much more with sports, like with the FIFA example you just mentioned, and a whole range of more reminding me of the whole reactor kind of structure here too, from our cyberpunk novels that we talk about all the time here. So
yeah, I love it. I think
super
it's cool
stuff.
And especially if they keep the quality of the graphics and the experience up, right? Each season. So,
right.
And it's also available on Xbox. Sorry. It's Xbox and PS4.
Well, and it probably requires that kind of hardware to push and drive all that stuff, too, that it's not just a, I could play this on my mobile device. But then again, mobile devices' power is pretty strong, too.
I know. I was about to say, have you played with a mobile device lately?
Just starting to walk down that path. And it's like, nope, I will walk back. but if I didn't want to walk back, if I wanted to just ride... this was something funny that I found on the Twitter, where someone had created a Roller Coaster Tycoon, and I played this game on my machine already years ago, and I thought it was a fun game. They created a Roller Coaster Tycoon example that requires 12 years to execute, to ride the ride. And I just thought that was... hilarious.
It's like the bus to nowhere.
It's like Desert Bus.
That's the
game that's what I put into the text too, or the Slack message around this, that when we talked about Desert Bus, which is driving across the desert from Las Vegas to LA, if I remember correctly,
in real time.
In real time. And if you fall asleep, the bus crashes and you get to start over again. I would hope that this does not work this way, because a roller coaster, once you get on it, there's not a lot of driving that happens. You just kind of enjoy the ride. 12 years to go do this. That's just crazy. Crazy. So another game angle to exercise, and we've seen some of these sort of things in a variety of different spaces, comes from what's this website called? Road to VR.
Yes.
So that's pretty intriguing. Talking about what Nordic Track is doing in conjunction with their bike. So you saw this. It looks like a VR experience. What was your sense?
Well, this is interesting. I was actually, at the mall, they have a Peloton store.
Yep.
And the Peloton, I kept looking at it going, well, what the heck, right? And so I was listening to another podcast, and they're going through what the Peloton actually is, which is basically a subscription workout service that's attached to a stationary bike and a large screen where you actually can get trainers who in real time will stream workouts to you, and you see your workout in relationship to everybody else doing their workout. And I was thought, well, that's kind of interesting, but no thank you. And so the Nordic Track, I used to have a Nordic Track years ago, and it was okay, and it was one of the ski machines. I wasn't too happy about it, and then switched to their treadmill, and their treadmill wasn't very good either. So this is their bike now. And what they've done to try to give you a better experience, because if you've ever done a stationary bike, unless you're doing like a spin class with a whole group of people and loud music and somebody yelling at you the whole time, it can be, oh, what's that word I'm looking for? Boring. And so the basic idea is they have a stationary bike with an attached Vive VR headset and a set of VR courses. That's a workout courses, and it's like $300-something subscription a year for those to give you something to do and experience while you're doing the VR bike. Also, right. They have fans built into the bike to give you the perception of speed. So the faster you're biking, the more the fans will blow on you, so you feel like you're going faster. Then you have the immersive environment in the headset. And they even put games in there, like flying through certain, rings in the air and shooting at people with your eyes as you bike past them. Right.
Ooh, and that's kind of cool.
So they've done some gamification. They've done some immersion. They've done some, additional sensory stuff, so you feel like you're actually out riding the bike. And I think that's actually kind of a really cool use case. I think the first year purchase price of the whole package is around $2,000, of which, if you think about the headset's like $500-something bucks, the bike's about $1,000, and then roughly round number $400 for the subscription service.
Yep. So for only $2,000, you can get on the bike and pedal all you want and go absolutely nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
in
the Peloton thing is like about $4,000. So price wise, it's probably a good deal.
Well, I've not looked into the Peloton that much. At $4,000, again, this is like a really high end bike that you put on a stationary platform. But is the subscription to
that's
the
part of it?
And, yeah, okay.
The subscription, I think, for the Peloton, I heard, is depending on which one you get. There's like a no device subscription that's like $20 a month, and then when you get to the one that's attached to the bike, it's like $30 or $40 a month.
Right. Okay.
So it's an expense, which is okay. If that's what it takes to get somebody to exercise, to say, okay, I've made the investment, I'm now going to use it.
Right.
I think that's a good idea. And the fact that they've got this whole immersion with the VR headset for the Nordic Track one, I think is cool. I think that does change the dynamic.
Well, it could. And what I like about this is that this is a great use of VR that will allow you to do more than what an AR experience might be, because you're still on the stationary bike, right? So the VR aspect would allow it to be much more immersive, very much like what you and Ian were talking about last week about having a VR headset on in a car that right. might help you with car sickness, and that might engage you in a different way, especially as we're getting more to autonomous vehicles. And ending the relentless, are we there yet? And probably changing it to, can we go a little while longer? Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So intriguing Nordic Track here for this particular thing. So speaking of intriguing things, this was another thing that came across my Twitter stream in the last couple of days, something called Project Alias. And the way it was described was a parasite that would live on top of your Google Home, as an example, and allow you to do amazing, fantastic things like change the name of your Google Home device so that when you use the code words, you could do something, you could have it act and react to you, as opposed to using the standard wake word and catchphrase that you might do, and I'm avoiding here deliberately so that our listening audience don't have their devices wake up.
You mean, hey Bixby?
Hey Bixby. Yeah, exactly. Andy loves that. So this is really funny because the way the device looks and how it sits on top of the Google Home does look like a parasite.
And which is the design, right?
Yeah, exactly. That is the design, and it's a Raspberry Pi, and I didn't even realize that until I looked at it here in a little bit more detail. But this would be a way of helping to ensure that as people walk into your own home, they don't say, hey, wake word, please order 100 pounds of rice.
Yeah, and nobody would ever uncover the secret word that you're using when you say, hey, Alias, please order 100 pounds of rice.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the video shows people using words like milkshake and stuff like that. Yes. Like, hey, milkshake, do da 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 da.
Yes. But all I'd have to do is listen to you in your house. Right. It's a cute idea. It really is. I think it's a short-term solution to the larger problem of non-customizable wake words for low-end, mass-marketed speaker assistants, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what you're going to see is we're going to get to a point where the brand value of saying, hey, A word, or hey, G word, or hey, S word, is no longer there. It's not the cachet to say, hey, I can say, hey, A word, and have it do things. And they're going to enable you to give your own private wake word, and then this thing goes away, right? But I like how they did it, right? I mean, it's such a perfect little thing. Let's just cover up the original wake word with noise so it doesn't hear it, and we'll whisper yours into the speaker.
Yes. So where I also went in thinking about this was the whole notion of things are listening to you all the time.
Yeah.
So if you want it to be someplace where things aren't listening to you, or where you don't want them to be listening to you, might there be a similar Alias device that would be clouding the audio spectrum in such a way that doesn't interrupt or bother humans, but not allow for wake words or other data to be captured? And that took me down a whole spy versus spy kind of,
we call that a rat hole
in the hotel. Yeah, it's a rat hole. But there's some reality to that too, right? You know, how do you really know you're going someplace business wise or other?
Well, what you need, you remember we talked about a couple of weeks back, the necklace that had the IR blaster, right?
Right. Same thing.
Hides your face. You need like a noise blaster. Maybe we all just wear Bane's mask. And nobody will understand anybody. And the assistants won't be able to.
I'm not hearing ever.
Yeah. Well, remember Mr. Mumbles when we were talking about how people are going to be constantly mumbling to themselves to do stuff or, yep. you know, And perhaps the right answer to all this will be when things go fully emotive headset wise, and you're just having to think about what it is that you want to do versus vocalizing it. Although the challenge there is going to be to have the discipline around your thoughts well enough that you don't think of something like, but I'm not going to think about elephants at all.
That's right. No pink elephants
happen all the time. Somebody really cool told me that one recently.
I don't know. I don't know who that could have been. Some nut.
So we got a couple other grab bag ones, and then we're kind of at time, so I want to hit them fast. One of them is a TechCrunch article, one that you found talking about getting your car's battery charged quickly. And this reminded me very briefly of the Tesla introduction, where they were showing how a large Audi was taking the time to gas up at the same time a Tesla car battery could be swapped out fully charged for one that wasn't charged. But this is a little bit different.
Yeah, this is really, I think, pretty potentially groundbreaking, in the sense that one of the big problems with electrical vehicles is the amount of time it takes to charge to full capacity in order to continue on very long road trips, right? Electrical vehicles now are ranging between 150 and about 300 miles per battery charge, full charge, depending on the vehicle, maybe 350 if you're really lucky. And then you've got hours of charging to happen. Well, if I'm taking a 10-hour drive, let's say from here to New York, it's about a 9-hour drive, right? I can almost make it on one tank of gas, but I have to usually tank up sometime in Jersey. And so if I have to sit there, you know, I'm like 60 miles from where I want to end up being at, and I have to now stop for 4 hours, that kind of really destroys the ability for electric vehicles to take long trips. So what this startup has claimed to be able to do is to be able to fully charge the batteries in electric vehicles, not special batteries, but the batteries that already exist in them, in about 120 miles distance in 5 minutes. So that says a full tank, quote unquote, on a 350 mile range vehicle is 15 minutes. That's much closer to about the 5 to 10 minutes it might take you to pull in and charge a regular gas vehicle and deal with everything. And what they've done is, it's really a software algorithm, from what I could tell, reading up on this, that does dynamic conditioning of the electricity as it's putting it into the charge going into the battery, to more effectively take advantage of the ability of the battery to capture the charge. And so it allows them to put a heck of a lot more load in at one time and back off as necessary before getting to a point where the battery would get too hot and explode or anything of that nature. So it's a very, very different algorithm for charging the battery, which could easily be rolled out into an infrastructure of fuel stations around the country and take electric cars into the mainstream completely.
I'm excited. I wonder about safety, because I can imagine how much has to be pushed through, and you don't want drivers touching the third rail, you know?
Well, how safe is tanking up gasoline? Someone could smoke, right? Boom. So,
yep.
Very cool.
Very cool. Love it. All right, last thing on the deck, which is kind of something else that we've chatted about here for a while, which is the Adapt BB shoe from Nike, which is the shoe that will tie its laces for you. And using an app, you are able to customize how tight said laces are. And boy, you know, Back to the Future talked about these sort of things before. We've known and seen things like this. This particular shoe's got some intriguing elements to it, and a really long article around it too.
Yeah, it
also
is.
This TechCrunch thing. I had another funny idea pop into my mind here, which was all about security too. And the security here is that NBA players are prohibited by NBA rules for having their smartphone apps out on the court with them. So if you have to adjust your shoe, right? So if it pops off your foot, which it really shouldn't because it's supposed to be pretty darn tight, or if you need to do something to adjust it, the shoe is built with two buttons that you can choose those buttons to change the adjustments, but you can't have your phone with you. So the what if idea that came to mind for me was, what if there was someone in the crowd sitting close enough to the bench and they started adjusting the player's shoes for them? Like where they didn't want it, like where the shoe would get suddenly really loose, and that would be a bad thing.
So really talented guy or gal sitting out in the crowd hacks into the Bluetooth low energy signal between the apps, spoofs the credentials, and then does that. That's cool.
Hey, stuff happens, right?
Well, and if it's Bluetooth low energy, you're talking about something that has to be, you know, centimeters away from the foot.
Well, does it have to be just centimeters? I thought even LE has got a range of, what, 10 meters or something?
No, I don't think it's that big. That's just plain Bluetooth. I believe LE, you know, the whole beacon stuff is a smaller footprint.
Okay.
I was playing around with a new chip the other day that does some really cool sensor readings, looking at it for a demo that we might be working on. And I literally had to basically touch the phone to the sensor to get it to register. All
right. Cool. All right. In that case, I can almost say never mind.
No, you can't. Because someone will figure it out. You could do a boost signal booster and other things, right?
Something like that. And furthermore, I mean, looking at the way that this actually works and where there's the little motor in the shoe and how it actually draws things together to give you that, what's the phrase they're using? Lockdown, I think. Or lock-in? Lockdown. That was intriguing to me because I hadn't realized how much of a problem this is, and as well as the adjustments that potentially do need to be made during a game time experience where the player, when you exercise, your feet get a little bit bigger. Yeah. As that happens. And shoot, you know, I've recognized that when I'm on a plane. My feet get bigger too. So wouldn't it be nice if the shoe could understand and adjust accordingly?
Dynamic adjustment. To do that?
Yeah. So the other shoe that was in there is the Next Level basketball shoe, which is talking a little bit about using textiles and self-tightening weaves in the textile, as opposed to using a laces or under the tongue laced kind of structure. So I'll be intrigued to see what that looks like too. And technology coming to your feet could be some good fun stuff.
That other shoe actually looked cooler to me.
Did it?
Yeah.
I like the lights though. I like the blinky lights. But then I like breaking lights. Michael, we are way over time here, unfortunately, for this week. But before we go, and you probably know my answer. I think I know yours. Any other games you're playing? Anything you want to share before we cut out for this week?
Nope. Just keep feeding us articles for us to talk about. Follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or over at our Facebook page at games@work.biz or come to our website at games@work.biz.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to games@work.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or at our website at games@work.biz.